You're listening to The Point. For more than 25 years, Mass Audubon Cape Cod has organized a full-day conference featuring presenters from environmental organizations across Cape Cod who address a diversity of natural history topics. This year's conference is this Saturday at Cape Cod Community College. Joining us for an overview of the conference and some of the research is David Shapiro, conference coordinator and teacher of naturalists at Mass Audubon's Long Pasture Wildlife Sanctuary. And David, welcome.
Thanks so much.
Also with us is Karen Dordeville. She's Sea Turtle Research Coordinator at Mass Audubon Cape Cod. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Mindy.
David, this conference has been happening for a long time. As you look back over the years, how have the topics changed, and what can that tell us about some of the challenges and successes in environmental protection?
Yeah, so this is the 27th annual Cape Cod Natural History Conference, and we've been doing it for a while, and it initially started off as a way for people to interact with some of the local scientists that were doing some really terrific work here on the Cape. And a lot of the science that was happening was really wildlife and natural history focused. And today we've kind of switched so that a lot of the science that we're looking at has to do with habitat restoration and water quality issues. And at the same time, we also do talk about birds, of course, because they're always a big draw, and all those big, wonderful animals are always a big draw as well. So we try to make sure that we work in some of those pieces.
Natural
too.
Life in general. We want to hear about all the
yes.
wildlife. Right?
Yeah.
So David, who's the target audience for the conference?
That's one of the things that makes this conference so special, I think, is that it's really a general audience. So we're looking for whoever wants to come to Cape Cod Community College for the day, learn about what's happening here on Cape Cod. So we get people that have come to the conference every time we've done it. They've come to every single conference 27 times, which is fabulous. We also get local scientists that want to hear what other scientists are doing. And we get students, which is really fantastic. People that are at Cape Cod Community College, and also high school students that are looking to learn a little bit more about what's happening in the natural world.
Yeah. So how do you determine what presenters or research to include in the conference?
Yeah, so we have a panel at Mass Audubon that works together to look at the submissions we get. And we do a request for proposals before Christmas. And we've been really lucky that each year we've gotten more presentations than we're able to hold at the conference. And so we work carefully as a team to see which topics are most appropriate, which are going to kind of fit in. And really what we like to do is kind of, you know, bundle things together. If we notice there's a lot of topics about water quality, how can we kind of put those together to make it make sense and to make it so that the conference kind of has a little bit of a through line so that things kind of lead up to one another. So
we don't have time to cover all the presenters, even though they are all very interesting. I was looking at like, wow, look at this. But it does take a thematic approach. So what kinds of topics do you touch on? Of course, you just mentioned one of the most challenging issues, wastewater.
Yes, definitely. So we have a couple of wastewater topics this year. We have Jessica Rempel from the Cape Cod Commission, who's going to be speaking about freshwater ponds. And they've been doing a lot of research looking at our freshwater ponds on Cape Cod and the impacts of wastewater on them. And then we also have Brian Horsley, who I know was just on the show the other day.
Yesterday, yeah.
He's also going to, and he's going to be speaking as well. And so those two topics really go hand in hand, talking about those
and that whole urine diversion toilet. That's a hot topic right now. Who would have thought, right? So people can learn a lot more about that. Because climate change, coastal erosion, and habitat loss to sea level rise, another issue facing the region. Tell us more about the presentations looking at mitigating those impacts or trying to better understand the impacts of climate change.
Yeah, so that's a really exciting theme that we have this year. And we have a couple of presenters that are looking specifically at habitat restoration. We have Casey Chastelain, who's going to be speaking about cranberry bog wetland restoration, which has been a big push here on the Cape, because as cranberry bogs become less profitable, it's like, what do we do with this land? And there's a really great movement to restore these habitats to what they once were. And so that will be one presentation. We're also going to be talking a little bit, actually a lot, about salt marsh restoration. We have Jordan Mora from the Association to Preserve Cape Cod, who's been working on a salt marsh restoration project in Barnstable, at the Barnstable Great Marsh, and talking about some ditch remediation to make those habitats resilient to climate change. And they're so important.
Right, Karen, you're the Sea Turtle Research Coordinator at Mass Audubon Cape Cod. Your presentation is about green sea turtles, not a species we talk about really all that much, right? We hear more about the Kemp's Ridley and even the loggerheads. So before you talk about your research in turtle programs, tell us more about the life cycle and natural history of green sea turtles.
Well, you're absolutely right, Mindy. They're one of the four species that occur in our waters every year, feeding late spring, summer, fall. But they're the one we talk about least because we think they're here in low numbers, but very predictably here as juveniles. These are small juveniles, sort of dinner plate and slightly larger. So they're kind of mysterious in our waters, but they're very well studied around the world. They're really a worldwide sea turtle. They're the largest. When they grow up, they're the largest of the hard shell turtles. They get to be 3-4 feet long, weigh 300-400 pounds
wow.
or more. Yeah, yeah, but not here.
Yeah.
They nest in subtropics and tropics around the world. They're not, I mean, I could talk on and on. It's fun to think about green turtles because, as I said, we want to know more about them. And we have just begun a pilot research project on our greens, which is just in preliminary stages, but it's very exciting.
Yeah. And this is, you're studying so the DNA of some of the dead turtles that you find, right? To see
right.
how, tell us about that, because that's fascinating. This research is fascinating. Tell us what it is.
Right. There's in recent years, there's a burgeoning interest in what some scientists have called the northern nesting greens. Now, this is just on our coast, the Northwest Atlantic. Okay. So not other places in the world where greens occur, but in the Northwest Atlantic, most of the nesting goes up, well, through South Carolina into North Carolina. So that's when the mature female green turtle, as all sea turtle mature females have to do, go ashore on a beach, dig a body pit, and then dig a nest and lay their eggs and then leave. And those eggs hatch into adorable little babies about 2 months later. But For as you could understand, for regulatory purposes, genetics are really important because different populations of sea turtles all over the world are doing very differently. Some are doing better, some are doing horribly. And so it's really important to understand management at a population level or a subpopulation level. So there is genetic work that has suggested a distinct subpopulation of green female greens who are nesting north of that, so north of South Carolina, basically. The farthest known nest was Delaware. It was one nest, but had eggs, they hatched. And so from genetics, from cracked eggshells or a dead hatchling, these scientists have determined that those nesting greens, and they've only looked at 52 of them, but they're genetically different than the big aggregation eastern Florida.
Yeah.
And so it begs the question, is this a distinct subpopulation?
Let me just ask you, when you say subpopulation, is that like a subspecies or is that something different?
No, this
is just
not
a
subspecies.
This would be the same type of turtle, just maybe behaving a little differently.
Well, not even behaving differently, but breeding
okay.
differently.
Breeding
yeah,
differently.
Not necessarily any different behavior or appearance or any, same species.
Gotcha.
But it's all based on genetics.
Yeah,
and
fascinating.
The importance of establishing populations is so that, say, in terms of commercial fisheries, such as gill netting, of which there is still some off our southeast coast, and that for certain species can be regulated by NOAA in terms of timing. And so the more we know about how it's impacting a certain subpopulation or population, the more important it is for helping that population continue to exist, really.
So what trends are you seeing in the number and species of cold stun turtles locally? I know we have kind of high years and low years, but what are we seeing?
Well, it's been over the last 10 years, the numbers have been going up a lot. I think, Mindy, but maybe some of your listeners don't, these are the three species, the Kemp's Ridley and the loggerhead and these juvenile greens, although a small number, that are feeding up north. And then as in the fall, they need to go south. They can't stay up here year round. So as the waters are cooling and daylight shortening, they're heading south. Some of them get trapped in Cape Cod Bay, get colder, colder. They're cold-blooded reptiles. They lose mobility. They begin washing onto our beaches with onshore winds, and our 200-plus trained volunteers and staff rescue them. So a lot of people know the basics of that story. The numbers have been going up this year, and I should add about 85%, give or take, of those are juvenile Kemp's Ridley species, and those are the most endangered sea turtle in the world. And 85% or so of our cold stuns are juvenile Kemp's Ridleys. A small number are greens, and so I will be talking about those.
Wait,
And
tell
oh,
us more
sorry.
about the unusual green turtle event that occurred in our waters in September of 2022 and why that's of interest to researchers.
This is an interesting story, and I can't tell the whole story for deference of time here. But in September 2022, we got a call from our colleagues on Nantucket with the Marine Mammal Alliance Nantucket, who are also our trained sea turtle volunteers out there, saying that two beach walkers that morning had said they saw something really weird on Sconset, so southeast Nantucket, and they took some pictures. And these beach walkers, Charles and L. Dean, happen to live in Florida, where they've seen nesting sea turtles. Now, sea turtles don't nest this far north. I can't quite say that anymore. I mean, basically I can, but so anyway, this triggered a lot of quick conferencing and phone calls and between agencies, because nesting, the bottom line is that a mature green female hauled out on Sconset and did nesting activity. So, and the photos, this is very, very clear. We weren't sure what it was because we don't see it. But in showing these photos to nesting experts in the southeast, every one of them right away just said, oh, it's green, because different species have different widths of tracks and characteristics of crawl. Greens crawl on the sand basically in butterfly-like swimming strokes, both front flippers together. Loggerhead, who would have been a similar size, crawl on the sand in freestyle. So one flip, left flipper, right flipper, left flipper, make a very different track for other reasons too. They all, to every one of them right away said green. Of course, nobody saw this turtle. They nest at night, but the track came out, very distinct tracks, and I'll be showing photos of it. The female dug three body pits and then went back into the ocean. They don't go back on the same track they come out on, and that's very clear in the track. So the Marine Mammal Alliance Nantucket people went back and took great photos and measurements and drew the pattern. And anyway, then, and these, of course, are federally protected species. So again, different agencies got involved, but a herpetologist at the Nantucket Conservation Foundation, Danielle O'Dell, was authorized to go out. She's a herpetologist, and excavate two of these body pits, which she did because there was an impending nor'easter.
Oh boy.
So we knew all this was going to disappear. And so she went out, no eggs. So this was what's called a false crawl. So she nested but did not lay
still
eggs.
Still fascinating, though, that you would do that on Nantucket. Yeah. So David, as we just heard, Mass Audubon's work is not just about birds. So how do you determine research areas for the organization?
Yeah, so Mass Audubon has been doing research and monitoring for a number of years, and we have some legacy projects like sea turtle cold stunning, diamondback terrapins, as well as lots of bird stuff. And then kind of ongoing research and monitoring as work is really associated with our action agenda. So really into the future, what we're really focusing on is building resiliency with climate change and working specifically with salt marshes, and that's where a lot of our focus is going on in the future.
And then, of course, you do bird research. So tell us more about migrating seabird staging trends, and that's going to be one of the presentations, right, at this year's conference?
It is, yes. So Jamie Infante, who is with Mass Audubon's Coastal Waterbird Program, is going to be talking about roseate terns, which are a federally listed species, and they use Massachusetts as a place, as a stopover, on their migration. And she'll be talking a little bit about the research that she has done on Norton Point and Edgartown, looking at some of the trends there. They've seen huge amounts of birds there in the fall. Almost 80% of the roseate tern population is there at one point in Massachusetts, Massachusetts roseate tern population. Okay. Yeah, it should be a great presentation.
Yeah. We're so fortunate to have a number of incredible organizations doing research here. Just talk quickly about the opportunities of collaboration and how this can improve our knowledge and understanding of habitat, species, and trends.
Yeah, lots of different organizations. We got Center for Coastal Studies, Association to Preserve Cape Cod are all there. Lots of opportunity for folks to talk to one another. You can go to the conference on Saturday and you can say hello to Karen and you can ask her your questions that just popped up. We also have poster presenters that you can speak to and interact with one-on-one. It's a really great opportunity, not just to hear about science, but also interact with the people who are doing it.
Yeah, and Karen, going back to the sea turtles for a moment, everybody loves the sea turtles, right? And we, as we talk about all the time, when they were in cold stun season, they can look like they're dead most of the time, but many times they're not. Are you always looking for volunteers to help in that cold stun season?
Not always, and I only say this because we do have to cap it, but we are looking always for volunteers, especially in certain areas of, and this is primarily Cape Cod Bay beaches, so the north side of the Cape. So anybody interested could certainly contact the sanctuary, probably in the early fall, late summer, early fall, and ask. And we would love to take everybody who's interested. Of course, people can donate or get involved other ways, but we do have to cap the number of volunteers just for logistics.
Yeah. And are we out of cold stun season now, now that we're moving into spring?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So we're good there. All right. Got like about a minute left. David, anything you want to add with our minute?
It's a super fun presentation, conference, $25. You get breakfast, which is lovely. Bring your own mug. And you get to interact with scientists, which is fabulous. Yeah. And learn a little bit about what's happening here on Cape Cod.
Learn a little bit about a whole lot of different things. You get a lot
exactly.
of great different presentations. David Shapiro is the conference co-coordinator and senior teacher naturalist at Mass Audubon's Long Pasture Wildlife Sanctuary. Karen Dordeville is sea turtle research coordinator at Mass Audubon's Cape Cod. And the annual Cape Cod Natural History Conference will be held on Saturday, March 9th, 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at Cape Cod Community College's Tilden Arts Center in Barnstable. We'll post a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Thank you both for being here this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.